Good evening. It's nice to see some of you I haven't seen in a really long time. And it's nice to see some of you I seem to see all the time, in medium amounts of time. It's basically nice to see everyone who's here this evening, including the breeze, which is just a mitzvah. It just feels so amazing. And I guess in a way, that's what our meditation can feel like, you know? And in some ways, I think that's part of what the text we're going to be looking at is pointing to. But, you know, it could just be like this wonderful breeze that if we could just let ourselves rest there. So as many of you who have been around, and actually that's pretty much everybody here, which is nice, unusual, Summer Ango is really just about upon us. And these Ango periods are really, really important and actually, I would say, treasured times in our practice. And this has been true going way back since the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, when during the rainy seasons, the community would really burrow in. You know, they often were wandering, but at that time they needed to stay put. And so it was really a time to burrow in. And this quality, I think, of turning in, even in the midst of activity, is where we actually find our peaceful dwelling, which is how the word Ango actually translates, is peaceful dwelling. And all of those participating in the Ango, which is really open to everyone, and everyone is really encouraged to join, because, you know, not only Ango, but this practice is not a solo event or a solo endeavor. It's really a community affair. And we all commit to intensify our practice of Zazen and of our awareness in really all aspects of our lives. So our Zazen is not just about what happens on the cushion. But if it doesn't happen on the cushion, it's not going to happen anywhere else. So that's not to get lost. And I thought it was really interesting, and I love the way in Roshi's letter to all of us that she actually made each of us shuso of this Ango period. So in a way, you know, she really made us each leaders and each responsible for our own practice effort and that of the community as a whole, which just takes so many forms. And a lot of people are going to be away on the residential retreat at the Grail, but actually probably just as many are going to be in the city practicing Ango in the midst of ongoing activity. And Sangha is equally important to both. So if you're not joining the community away, just if you can, you're really encouraged to join and to join and support the community here. This is for yourself and actually for others. And, you know, it's really important to not underestimate the value of your own presence. Even if you don't say a word, your presence changes the dynamic and the energy of whatever it is that's happening. So it makes a difference. And ever since the beginning that I started doing this practice, and this continues, I find that I'll often just ask myself the question, so what is practice? And that seems to be a kind of never-ending question. It seems to have no bottom and no top. And it was interesting because I was writing this talk yesterday because I knew I would have to be teaching today. And so right after I had kind of written that sentence as a question to myself, I needed to go to the bathroom. I was in my studio, and so I went down the hall and to the bathroom to relieve myself. And I guess I had a very satisfying dump. And as I was leaving, I turned and I checked out the toilet, which was, it was just no longer pristine. There was, it was a little brown. So first, you know, I just started to walk out, and I was like, oh, well, and I begin to go walking down the hall, and then it was like, oh, right, I actually should turn around and clean the bowl. Like, it was like this delayed awareness of slow motion. Right. So, you know, I went back, and then I squirted the blue cleaner. It wasn't a spray. It was that really thick stuff, and it was just, it was this beautiful blue, and it was actually swirling around in the toilet, and then it was just this kind of nice foam, and it was really kind of this wonderful smell. And then I got the little scrubby thing, and I was scrubbing, it was sort of like brushing my teeth, and it was just really good. Rinsed out the scrubber in the big sink, put it back, and it fit right in its little container, and then I flushed the toilet, and it was just like a beautiful thing. It smelled really fresh and clean and ready, and it was actually just kind of this wonderful, deeply satisfying experience that I typically just put off, want to just pretend nothing's, you know, that some other, you know, being is going to take care of this, and or avoid whatever. But it was just like when I just really let myself enter into it, it was like, oh my God, it was actually, you know, not only was it not, you know, bad, it was actually kind of wonderful. I mean, not wonderful the way we might think going swimming in the Bahamas is wonderful, but there was a joy there and a satisfaction there that was rich. And I thought, oh, right, this is practice. There must be a koan about this. So I got out my Mumon Khan and it was like, oh, Joshu says wash your bowls. And this koan goes like this. Once a monk made a request of Joshu. I have just entered the monastery. He said, please give me instructions, master. And then Joshu said, have you had your breakfast? And yes, I have, replied the monk. Then said Joshu, wash your bowls. And at this, the monk had an insight. And there's an accompanying short poem that goes to the koan, and they all have this. And the poem goes, because it is so very clear, it takes longer to come to the realization. If you know at once candlelight is fire, the meal has long been cooked. So, you know, I think this kind of gets at this quality where it's just so easy for us to get lost in these very complex and noble ideas of practice. And, you know, it's important to give it tremendous value, but we can do that in a way that sort of places it always just a little bit beyond our reach. It becomes something that, you know, maybe we can't really do ourselves, or not now because we don't have enough time, or maybe we don't read and study enough, or maybe we feel like we don't really understand whatever it is that we're reading, or we think that our practice is all the form that happens here, and we don't even get what that is or why that is. So, you know, how can I really be practicing? Or in some way, it's like we don't really get what the game plan is. You know, there's no 4-year university of practice that, you know, year one we take these 6 courses, and then it's just, that doesn't happen. Or maybe it's just that we don't come enough, or we don't sit enough. And, you know, we can create really an infinite variety of excuses and explanations and reasons of, you know, why we can't or don't practice. You know, but perhaps that often we actually are practicing when we think we're not. And, you know, what can be more insidious is actually maybe we're not really practicing when we're certain that we are. So it's a very ordinary and at the same time mysteriously elusive thing. What to do? So Joshu asked the monk who's sincerely come to him for instruction on what to do. And, you know, I think we can imagine that he means, you know, what can I do to practice? To find what I think is enlightenment. And Joshu responds to this very clearly. He asks him, have you eaten your breakfast yet? So we've kind of come down from the clouds and we've come right smack into this particular monk's particular morning. And the monk replies that he has, and so Joshu then responds, okay, well, go wash your bowls. He doesn't say, okay, now read and expound a sutra. He doesn't go off, say, okay, go off and turn and sit and face a wall for 3 hours and stand on your head. And it's basically, let's take care of the next thing in your life that's presenting itself right here and right now. Go wash your bowls. He doesn't say, go wash your bowls so you can then go do the important work of studying or of practicing liturgical functions or postulizing. Basically, he says, go wash your bowls. Take care of what's presenting itself and needs to be done in your life right now. Fully. That's it. And in a certain way, is there ever really anything else? In the poem, he says, because it's so very clear, it takes longer to come to the realization. The truth of our lives is so transparent in a way that we tend to look right through it and just forget to move into it. You know, we just have this endless certainty that there must be more, and we are on this endless quest for more. And in this quest, we're oblivious really to the wonder of what is here, and what in fact is always here when we're not busy looking for something else. If you know it once the candlelight is fired, the meal has long been cooked. So yes, it is always right here, but you know, why is it that we don't know this? Because if it's so obvious, you know, why do I keep missing it? He says, the meal has not been cooked enough, our practice not yet fully seasoned. You know, in a sense, I think we all know that it's our own minds that get in the way of actually just seeing what's right in front of us. So, our conditioning, you know, which in whatever way has us each believing that we're not enough and that we are not ourselves a piece of this boundless wonder that we call life. That because we just don't believe that, we just feel this bottomless need to understand and control it. And this comes from not really being present here now, but from all the stuff that happened to us. You know, particularly when we were growing up. And, you know, it seems to me to be part of the human condition that that is always complicated, messy, and, well, very complicated and very messy and often very damaging for whatever infinity of reasons. Pretty much, I think that's been true for really anybody I've ever encountered. And seems to have been going back to, you know, the whenever this text, a long time ago, was maybe a long time ago, I don't know what century it was, but many, 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 you know, oh, more than 1,000 years ago. So because of this, you know, we always are looking outward, scanning, really, for what will fill us, what will prop us up, what will protect us from the danger of not having enough, the danger of not being enough. Really kind of this ongoing, ever-changing threat of what we perceive as outside of us. And I think it's this quality, this sort of desperate hunger that brings probably everyone in one way or another to this practice. And if we are fortunate enough to, however and for whatever reasons, find our way to this practice, I think we get a sense that there actually is a way to address this, to experience ourselves and the world in a different way, to actually find some measure of peace inside and to be of use in the larger world. And I think, as we've heard before, you know, mostly, you know, at the start, we just want some peace. Just to be able to let our minds rest. You know, I think we've all probably experienced, you know, that our minds, our bodies can actually be off on the beach somewhere. But if our minds are not there as well, that can actually be more stressful than not being on the beach at all. So we enter really into the cauldron of Zazen to cook. And to cook as slowly as our entire lifespan or as quick as the plop of a raindrop. We turn our gaze inwards and we just stop endlessly looking out with hungry, critical eyes. With our gaze turned inward, we can begin to taste everything that we've been so busily and desperately looking for. But this takes time, a lot of time, like decades of time. But I think everything worth doing takes time. And so we need to practice this letting go of our endlessly, endlessly sprouting ideas and emotions which get between ourselves and ourselves and ourselves and the world. So we patiently and simply see and observe what is there, not fixing it, not changing to it, not changing it, not adding to it, not spicing it up, not understanding it, just see it. This is our Zazen practice, just to be aware of what is happening in our minds in this moment. And this gentle, clear awareness does allow our stuff to somehow become lighter. Because this awareness is before we're even making the distinctions of I shouldn't be thinking this or this is bad or whatever. It's that awareness that's even before that. That sensational quality of just presence. And when we do this, as our stuff just becomes lighter, it can blow and move with the wind and the sounds of the traffic, and it can actually begin to fall like leaves off a tree. And even in the midst of tremendous sadness, which may be part of what arises, there's also joy here. Nothing is excluded, and in this space, there's actually room for everything. Sadness and joy don't negate each other. But like a tree, all those leaves of our conditioned minds keep growing back. You know, it's not like we get rid of them or we've practiced for, what, even 30 years, or okay, we all of a sudden, you know, get the robe or whatever it is, and then we can stop. Because the leaves keep growing. There's no end. So we need to keep sitting, keep practicing awareness wherever we are, so those leaves, well, I should say, as those leaves are really everywhere that we are. And they blow everywhere in our lives. But I think you'll find, and probably many of you have found, and is what keeps you coming and doing this in seemingly insane thing in a way, is that when we really start seeing them, they really do blow rather than just settle and smother and hide what's actually happening. So really use the summer Ango period as recommended in Roshi's letter in its entirety to intensify your Zazen practice, because that facilitates this. And, you know, relax into this quality of active awareness, of really being where you are, right where you are, with whomever you're with, doing whatever you're doing. And you may find, you know, that what's happening in your mind is partly being reflected in the relationships of those closest to you, and vice versa, what's happening outside is reflected inside our own minds. So this most ordinary activity may reflect an entire universe of leaves to study and let blow away, even as they brush against your face and tickle your nose. Stay with it. Do not think the moon appears when the clouds are gone. All the time it has been there in the sky, so perfectly clear. Joshua wrote that, not me. Okay.